Good morning, and thank you for joining me on the Path to Liberty. I'm Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, and this is the Fast Friday edition of the show for September 1st, 2023. And if you've been following the show for any amount of time, you may have heard me talk about how the shots fired in April 1775 at Lexington and Concord were not because they were trying to shoot it out in order to get some representatives to tax the people. They were actually in response to a British gun control program that had been ramping up over a number of months going back into 1774. So on this episode, I want to share with you a quick story about a big event on that kind of ramp up of gun control by the British that happened today in history, September 1st, 1774, and on September 2nd, called the Powder Alarm. And to kick it off, let's go to a blog post by Mike Meharry. We got to get a little backstory of what's going on here. And he said, in the aftermath of the Boston Tea Party, Parliament passed the Coercive Acts. A lot of people call them Intolerable Acts. Among other moves, the British closed the port of Boston and revoked the Charter of Massachusetts, bringing the colony under the total control of the British government. These actions, Mike writes, further inflamed tensions between the British and the American colonists. And many of the colonists saw this as a further attempt to strip them of their right to self-rule and force them into submission. So the kind of the mentality was, okay, the British are, you know, they've got a standing army, they're occupying us, and now they're shutting down our right to self-rule. What else are they going to do? Well, don't be surprised when you hear about it. Here from American History Central, they say, in that Massachusetts Government Act, Parliament revoked the Massachusetts Charter and stripped the General Assembly, the lower house of the legislature, of the right to elect the members of the upper house, which was known as the Council. And they were just replaced and then appointed by, you know, the important people, General Gage. And they go on at American History Central. With the loss of the freedom to elect their own representatives in their own colony, the people of Massachusetts began to plan for the worst. It seemed like it was on its way. There was already some really bad stuff happening. They passed these coercive acts. They were really going after them. And, well, we'll see what happens here. Many of the towns throughout the colony were in the habit of storing weapons and ammunition in storehouses throughout the colony, including the provincial powder house on Quarry Hill in Charleston. Slowly and quietly, they were smart about this. The towns started removing their weapons and ammunition from the storehouses, but someone narked. And if you remember the old phrase, snitches get stitches, I'm not sure if that's exactly how it went down, but I'll get to that in just a moment. First, a quick side note on the powder from David Koppel in his great paper, How the British Gun Control Program Precipitated the American Revolutionary War. And he points this out. And I'll link to this, plus everything else that I'm citing, a bunch of blog posts and articles and things like that, over in the show notes over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. Alan Mosley should get that all set up in the next few hours after this live stream is done here this morning. And that'll be available for you a little bit later today. But here's how David writes it. Modern smokeless gunpowder is stable under most conditions. The black powder of the 18th century was far more volatile. Accordingly, large quantities of that black powder were often stored in the town's powder house, typically a reinforced brick building. The powder house would hold merchants' reserves. This is large quantities stored by individuals, as well as the powder for use by the local militia. So there's a lot of stuff for individuals. There's going to be some government powder in there. Basically, this was just kind of a safe storage, and everybody was working together, and everybody was friends for a while, but it didn't last. Back to Meharry. General Thomas Gage was appointed the military governor of Massachusetts. Thinking, and you might think that this next line is just kind of just some blog hyperbole, but it really is the case. We learn after the fact that Gage actually thought this was the best approach. Thinking the best way to keep the peace would be to disarm the colonists as much as possible, he set in motion a scheme to secretly remove military equipment, including guns and gunpowder, from storehouses across New England. Most of the gunpowder, think about that. The general with the empire thought the best way to have peaceful relationship with the people would be to disarm them under the threat of violence and force. It's really no different than maybe an empire you might be familiar with living under today. Going on, Mike says, most of the gunpowder and weapons stored in these magazines belonged to the provincial governments, but some were the property of individual towns and merchants. So the provincial government stuff, if, you know, they owned it, I guess. I mean, we can get in debates about, you know, taxation and all that stuff, too, but that's a different story. One locked storehouse near Boston in what was then part of Charleston, and this is from Wikipedia, now Powder House Square in Somerville, was controlled by William Brattle, the leader of the provincial militia and an appointee of the governor. And I've read that people weren't really too certain what side he was on, and Wikipedia even points that out as well. Brattle, who had not obviously sided with either loyalists or patriots, notified Gage in a letter dated August 27th, 1774, that the provincial or king's powder was the only supply remaining in that storehouse as the towns had removed all of theirs. So there's your narc. Somebody alerted. Gage needs to know about this. They're taking what they own and keeping it out of a place that we have control over. Wow. Gage decided that this powder had to be brought to Boston for safekeeping. And on August 31st, he dispatched somebody, Middlesex County Sheriff David Phipps, to go see Brattle with orders to remove the powder. Brattle then handed the magazine key over to him, and there it is. Gage, and this is interesting, Gage also concurrently lost the letter Brattle wrote to him, which was soon found and publicized by the Patriots. So this kind of set off a bit of a firestorm. Here back to Mike Meharry. So on September 1st, Gage sent a force of 250 redcoats. So if this was just a peace mission, why is he sending all these troops? He sent a force of 250 redcoats under the command of Lieutenant Colonel George Madison to seize the powder. The detachment of troops rode up the Mystic River from Boston and landed about a mile from the powder house. Sheriff Phipps gave the soldiers the keys to the storehouse, and they quickly removed the remaining powder. And then they did another move. Most of the troops returned to Boston, but a small detachment marched to Cambridge and seized two artillery pieces from the local militia there as well. Now, there was a lot of talk about what was going on. And of course, information, there was a lot of disinformation, misinformation, rumors and things like that. And here a letter of a September 1st on the morning, John Andrews. He said, yesterday in the afternoon, 280 men were drafted from the several regiments in the common, furnished with a day's provision each, to be in readiness to march early in the morning. Various were the conjectures respecting their destination. What are these troops doing and where are they going? They're thinking. But this morning, the mystery is unraveled, for a sufficient number of boots from the men of war and transports took them on board between 4 and 5 o'clock this morning, and proceeding up the Mystic River, landed them at the back of Bob Temple's house. Even knows the guy's house, from whence they proceeded to the magazine, and are now at this time 8 o'clock, taking away the powder, being near 300 barrels belonging to the province, which they are lodging in Temple's barn. So they, somebody watched this, wrote about it, and pointed out that this was happening. Now, again, I was saying there's a lot of stuff that actually really spread like wildfire about this. And it's interesting to see how they responded, thinking they were under fire, actually. Here from J.L. Bell, he points out that General Comus Gage's move to take control of the provincial gunpowder supply, along with two cannon assigned to the Middlesex County Militia, set off the reaction known as the Powder Alarm. And it's a great name for it, really. Rumors, Wikipedia points out, flew throughout the day across the countryside about the British troop movements. Now, information traveled still pretty quickly, and the response was pretty quick, especially if you think about the way people had to communicate at the time. It's not like they were posting on X and you could see a quick video or a live stream of what was going on. Word had to get out. The regulars were marching. This is one of the rumors. Provincial powder had been seized. War was at hand. People had been killed. Boston was being bombarded by warships. The alarm spread as far as Connecticut, even Philadelphia as well. A lot of exaggerated accounts were out there, and J.L. Bell has cataloged a number of them. He said a traveling merchant named McNeil told the Reverend Ezra Stiles that in Shrewsbury, he was woken in the middle of the night by somebody violently rapping up the landlord, telling the doleful story that the powder was taken and six men killed. So it's interesting to see how quickly it went from, well, they snuck up there with a bunch of troops, a show of force, took, well, what under the law they would say is theirs. They probably, I'm assuming they would have taken whatever else was there had the Patriots not been smart about this and got it out in advance. But anyways, from Hartford, Titus Hosmer informed Silas Deane that Brattle at Cambridge, a high Tory, had petitioned Gage for troops to protect him at his house, which Gage granted. A mob gathered in demand of Brattle to renounce his Toryism, or whatever you may term it. But after a short parley, the troop fired, killed some right out, a large number wounded, and this is what people are hearing. War is at hand in September of 1774. The Reverend Stephen Williams, minister of Longmeadow, and his congregation heard that, quote, the Royal Navy ships in ye harbor of Boston and ye army on ye land side were also firing upon the town. So it was like ye town was demolished. Not even just a shot here and there, but really intense. And we know that the dire rumors traveled at least as far as Philadelphia, where John Adams heard about it and wrote in his diary a few days later, September of 1774, went to Congress again, received by an express an intimation of the bombardment of Boston. A confused account, but an alarming one indeed. God grant it may not be found true. So we're hearing all over the place. John Adams, Silas Deane, many others are hearing about just horrible attacks, which ended up happening later on, but they were hearing about them before they actually happened. Now, more accurate reports started to follow, but by that point, it was almost too late. J.L. Bell put it this way. By the time they arrived, people's thinking about the royal government had started to change. And I think they had already changed, but they were seeing how dangerous it was as well. And in the meantime, as Wikipedia notes, from all over the region, so this spread, again, like wildfire, it was very quick. All over the region, people took up arms and began streaming towards Boston. I've seen anywhere from 5,000 to 20,000 people took up arms and started pouring towards Boston. One traveler in Shrewsbury reported that in the space of 15 minutes, 50 men had gathered, equipped themselves, sent out messengers to surrounding towns, and left for Boston. There was no question, no need to verify, nothing. We know that the British are being really aggressive. We know that the British, the Stamp Act and the Townshend Acts and the Boston Tea Party and the Coercive Acts and their Standing Army and their claim in the Declaratory Act, power over the colonies in all cases whatsoever. They want to subjugate the people. So a lot of people were thinking that already. And soon as any word that things were ramping up, people were very quick to respond to defend their lives, their liberty, their property, their country, their neighbors, etc. As many as thousands of them on the same day, within 24 hours, they are rolling in to protect people. And back to J.L. Bell, he said that evening, so on September 1st, that evening, there were some disturbances in Cambridge outside the house of William Brattle. Maybe he shouldn't have been telling people what was going on. The militia general who had prompted Gage's move, and Jonathan Sewall, I'm not sure how to say that, Sewall, the royal attorney general. But eventually everyone went home, especially after Esther Sewall treated the crowd around her home to a round of drinks. I'm not sure how true that is. J.L. Bell is an incredible historian. So if you want to understand a lot of really niche history, this guy does a lot of great, great work. And I'm always learning things from him. So that's just kind of a fun side story that I thought I wanted to share as well. Back to Mike Meharry, he said the following day, so here, thousands of people are pouring towards Boston from all over the place as far as Connecticut. Quickly, within 24 hours, several thousand patriots gathered in Cambridge. They forced a number of loyalists, including Brattle, to flee for their lives. They also forced Phipps, the sheriff who went there with the orders to Brattle, to disassociate himself in writing from all government actions. And so they really were all about forcing resignations, running them out of town on a rail. Really, if you're gonna do this type of thing, we don't want you around here. And that's the attitude that they had. Here from J.L. Bell again. Those men demanded that several neighbors, so thousands of people, he said, on September 2nd, 1774, thousands of Massachusetts farmers marched up and down the street outside the house in an event later called the Powder Alarm. Those men demanded that several neighbors, including Attorney General Jonathan Sewall, council members Samuel Danforth and Joseph Lee, and then Sheriff David Phipps, give up their royal appointments under the new Massachusetts Government Act or apologize for actions they had taken under that law. So I don't actually know which ones actually apologized or resigned or what, but there was a lot of pressure and thousands of people trying to make it happen. At the end of the day, JL writes, the crowd surrounded Lieutenant Governor Thomas Oliver's house a mile to the west and threatened him into signing a resignation as well. Now, this is just kind of how it went down. Eventually, people started learning that, these are all rumors. There was no bombardment of Boston. No one was getting shot. No towns were razed. None of that was happening. So very quickly, the people who had armed up as militia to protect their country went home. But they were ready for more. And we know that in the coming months, things certainly ramped up. The king then banned importation of all arms and ammunition without a permit. And guess what? Of course, once you require a permission slip, government can say, well, we're not going to give any. And from my understanding, at least the research that I've done, no one was ever issued a permit to import arms or ammunition. Then Lord Dartmouth, the Royal Secretary of State for America, suggested Gage be a bit more aggressive. He said, upon no account suffer the inhabitants of at least the town of Boston to assemble themselves in arms on any pretense whatever, either of town guard or militia duty. And then he followed up with an even more aggressive request. He said, all cannon, small arms, and other military stores of every kind that may be either in any magazine or secreted for the purposes of aiding the rebellion should be seized immediately. And we know what happened. With a goal of confiscation, gun control, gun confiscation, the British eventually marched on Lexington and Concord in April of 1775. The rest is history. I covered all of that ramp up in much more detail in an episode earlier this year. It was gun control what started the war for independence. Well, I hope you guys found this interesting. It was educational. This is a little different episode than I've been doing recently, but I love going through this kind of really important history to see these turning points on what went down. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed sharing this with you. And if you want to help us share this with more people, absolutely nothing helps us get this work done every single day more than the financial faith and support of our members. You can join us for as little as $2 a month over at 10thamendmentcenter.com/members. A quick reminder, I'm definitely not doing a show on Monday, but it's very likely I'm not going to have any shows next week. I've got a lot of construction and some family visiting and things like that, so I'm not sure if I'm going to be available to do that. But if I do find time, I will set up a couple of live streams or maybe one, and it might even be at a unique time. So just kind of stay tuned. And if you listen in the archives or listen to the podcast edition, it's not going to change too much as far as logistics on your end. But I really appreciate you spending some of your time with me today. I really hope you have an awesome weekend, and I look forward to seeing you next time here on the Path to Liberty.